Okay, welcome to Health on the Hill. We are the four usual hosts. I'm Simon.
I'm Gil.
Jamie.
And I'm Chris.
And today's topic is global health. We hope you've enjoyed our previous three shows. We have a three-part series of the topic global health, today being the first show in that series. And a few housekeeping issues first. We are in the process of getting a podcast for this show set up, which will make it much more convenient for our listening viewers. Wow. Stumbled right out of the gates again. Our listeners. And the second order of business is that you are listening to CFIR 88.7, 94.7 cable, and you can listen to this live streaming on CFIR.ca.
Based out of here in Prince George.
When can you listen to this?
This show is on, the initial broadcast is 5 p.m. Monday afternoons, and a rebroadcast on Saturday afternoons at
noon.
12 noon. Yes. All right, so global health is the topic for today. Now, again, like all of these show topics, that's a very broad word, meaning many different things to many different people. So I guess for the sake of this show today, what do we mean by global health?
What do we mean? Global health could apply to helping vaccinate the third world countries. What else could it mean?
It could be teaching people, whether it's about health issues or even giving them an education so they're not working in menial jobs, whether it's in the third world or the first world. What if it's, it could be awareness campaigns, so use a condom in, the use a condom campaigns in Africa to combat AIDS, or the programs to repair fistulas in Ethiopia, or maybe even going to visit, doing and working in a school in northern India.
So I guess the point is that our training is based in Canada, but applicable in the entire world. Is that the point?
Pretty much. And it's not just physicians and healthcare practitioners that can work in global health. It's teachers, it's policy advocates, it's even software billionaires like Bill Gates.
Okay, so why would somebody go and work in another country?
Well, I guess nowadays we think of the world as a global community now, and we're much more aware of what goes on in other countries. And therefore, we probably want to help out a little bit more.
Yeah. What? And so there's the desire to help out more. What else could drive someone to want to go?
Well, there's just, I mean, really the desire to travel, for one. I know is a big aspect of it for a lot of people, is they get to go somewhere, but they get to do something that they feel is meaningful at the same time. So that's another thing, I guess.
Yeah. Life experience.
Sure.
So it's I know some people that go not because it's a nice area, but because it'll enrich their lives, it'll give them new perspective on what they have and what they don't have, and what others don't have. It could be very, I don't know.
Well, it's eye-opening for sure.
Yeah, it could be really eye-opening.
Because I mean, we kind of lead a relatively sheltered life in this part of the world, and when you go see the way that it is for a lot of the people in the world, it's just a completely eye-opening experience.
On a cynical side, though, it could be really selfish. Like,
yeah, that's a very good point, Gil. Like, we talk about global health like it's this, savior activity, people going to other places and saving the world, if you will. And, I think that's just one part of it. I mean, there's lots of good that people can do, but there's also negative impacts to, some NGOs and some of the work that people from Western countries are doing in more developing countries. And that's something that we're going to talk about a lot more in the second show of this series. Today we're going to focus mainly on some personal stories. We've got an interview coming up in a bit from an individual named Saad Joseph. And Gil, can you maybe tell us a little bit about him?
So Saad Joseph, there's a crazy story about him. He is a Liberian man who was raised in a smaller village in Liberia. His father was the chief. And then when he was 12 years old, the civil war reached his village. His entire family was killed by the rebels, and he managed to escape. He traveled with many of the other villagers that had managed to escape, carrying their belongings so that they would feed him. Eventually, they made it to a refugee camp, and he spent, I believe it was 10 years living there on his own as an orphan, fighting to survive. And that would be difficult just having to do that. I can't imagine how hard that was. But then the rebels got to the refugee camp, and there he managed to see them coming, and they spoke with him at night trying to figure out where the government soldiers were while he was cooking, because you had to cook in the middle of the night there or people would steal your food. And so once again he managed to escape the rebels because he agreed not to tell the government soldiers that they had come, and he escaped across the border and was arrested by, I believe it was Ghanaian forces, because he couldn't prove he was not a rebel. He was held in jail there for a year, where they had tiny cells that were 15 by 15 feet or something like that. You get the idea of how small they were, with up to 100 people in them. And when they slept, they had to cuddle up head to foot, laying on their side, and then they would shuffle up, kind of like if you were packing dominoes together. And they had to sleep like that every night on the floor in a festering African jail. And after a year, someone spoke for him, and that meant that he could be released, that he wasn't a rebel. And he went to the capital city and began working for NGOs, doing volunteer work, because he saw them doing good. And when they offered to help him get refugee status in Canada or the United States, he turned them down. And he said, I want to help my country. I don't want to leave Africa. And eventually he did go back to Liberia. He went to the capital city. And eventually he started setting up schools. So now he set up two schools that operate. We'll talk about this in the interview, exactly what it does. But it's affecting 2,400 people in his home country. So he's achieved his dream, and that's his motivation for helping, was because he saw what war did to his country. He saw what people can become, and he wants to try to prevent his country from falling back into war. So before we get to that interview, let's talk a little bit about motivations for doing global health, whether it's in your home country or abroad. We brought up some of those, but what do you guys think?
I guess a good example is this guy himself. I mean, his motivations are pure. I mean, he went through a major crisis in his life that made him want to help others. Other people might have purely selfish motivations.
Absolutely, and let's talk about some of those. I mean, it's not uncommon for people to want to pad their resume or CV. That's a reason, unfortunately, for people to do humanitarian work. What are some other, I guess, non-pure reasons?
Is that entirely bad if you're padding the resume by doing good that helps abroad?
I would say it's not entirely bad, but the motivations themselves are not admirable. Would you agree?
I'd agree that the motivations aren't admirable, but the outcome could be good. I'm playing the devil's advocate here.
The means justify the ends kind of thing? Or the ends justify the means? Sorry, I'm backwards.
Either way.
I mean, it boils up to a win-win situation. You get what you want out of it as long as you're helping other people and they benefit from it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're getting at? Sort of?
Yeah, kind of.
I guess it's a situation where there's just so much need that, what, even bad motivations can produce good results? Is that what we're talking about?
I think that's probably exactly what it is. Other than, I think there's a mistake or in global health that some of the good that you do might not be that good. You know, it might look good, but it's maybe perhaps not doing that much or having that much benefit in the other countries.
True. Another topic, actually, you mentioned this earlier, Jamie, was how we're in much more of, you know, what we call a global community. So why don't we talk a little bit about why that is? Like, global health has been growing in popularity for the past 20, 30, 40 years. And we attribute it to the fact that the world's a lot smaller. So what, like, obviously geographically the world's not shrinking. So what kind of things are happening in our culture that are making global health more visible?
Internet, of course. So it'd be one of the major factors. We could see what's going on just by a few clicks of a button in other countries, right?
Also travel. I mean, that's changed dramatically in the last 50 or 60 years, is the ability to go anywhere
in
a day.
Even in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Because we're talking last 20 to 30 years. 20 years ago, it would have been prohibitively expensive for Sa to come to Prince George to speak with us and to speak with others in his attempt to fundraise. Because of the falling price relative to other prices, the falling price of air travel, he can now do that.
Yeah, and I think like the success of global health ventures themselves are also fueling future projects too, in that, you know, certain projects have success and then they gain momentum, they gain publicity, and then it interests other people in the same sorts of ventures. So it's also building off of itself too, which is good to see. So I think we've introduced global health. We've shown a few different sides of what we're talking about here. So I think now would be a great time to play our interview with Saw Joseph. Gil introduced Saw Joseph. This interview originally took place at a talk here in Prince George at Family Medicine Interest Group Night Speakers Night. This talk took place on October 12th at Prince George Regional Hospital to a group of medical students. So it's my pleasure to introduce Saw Joseph.
So we're here with Saad Joseph, and he is from Liberia?
Yeah, from Liberia.
So what are you doing here?
Well, basically I'm here to create awareness about Liberia, explain the present need. Liberians have been in the decade of a civil war, and now the war is over. Basically there are some needs that we have. And I'm here to create awareness, to tell people exactly the problems that are going on. Most of the, during the time of the war, we have the most of the kids who were victims, their parents were killed. They have no source of income. And I have them going to a school. I have a school that all of those kids attend free of charge. They get medical assistance from there. And they get a meal at the school, one meal a day. And we have 1,800 kids at the school. And I'm here to create awareness and see how best we can get people to get involved to help to support these kids, because this is the only hope they have. And at present, we don't have any kind of support to keep running the school, to pay for food for them and medication. So I'm here to create awareness, talk to people, and see how bad they can get involved with us.
So this week's topic that we're talking about is global health. And a lot of global health isn't even health related. It can be education related. So how do you see your school affecting the futures of the children that you teach and their health?
Well, the kids, have education in the school. Mm-hmm. We have teachers that give them health education. And basically this is important because most of the kids don't even know that you have to wash your hands before you eat. You know, so all of those things we teach them in the classroom. And we also have the women, girls who are attending our skill training school. We also teach them.
Is this your women's program that you operate as well?
Yeah. And they come and they learn skills. So part of it is to tell them what they need to know in terms of health. In fact, we have two nurses who serve as nurse at the same time serve as counselors that go on a rotational basis to the Vera classroom, also go in the girls' classroom to tell them about health education, explain to them about HIV/AIDS, also transmitted diseases and what have you, or how can you, how do they affect you and what's the effect of it and what have you. So basically, in terms of health, the school respect that, and also the organization Plan for the Children Humanitarian Aid is also, we are also giving free medical assistance to the community. Part of my trip here is to talk to people, to get involved with the nurses and doctors, so they can come over and go on mission trip to help give out medications to the community. So we have been receiving medical teams coming to Liberia, and part of my appeal here is to also ask for people to come in, be able to come and help our local clinic and the villages of people that cannot afford medication. There are people that die because they cannot even afford to pay for malaria treatment or typhoid or diarrhea. But part of it, if we are as a clinic organization and empower the medical aspect of our organization, we can do a lot.
So I'm just want to get this straight. Right now you have 1,080 students? Or
1,800
students. 1,800 students.
Yeah.
In kindergarten through grade 10?
Ninth grade.
Ninth grade.
Yeah.
Next year it'll be going on to grade 10?
Yeah. Every year we try to add another classroom.
So 1,800 students.
Yeah.
You also have 600 women?
600 women that come. Mm-hmm. They come in the afternoon from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock.
And they're being educated with skills.
Skills, yeah.
Yeah, so cooking and sewing.
Tailoring.
Yeah.
Or hairdressing. And I will also teach them to learn how to make soap. And then we'll get girls that are learning mixing the carpentry as well.
And you also teach them how to read and write and the numbers?
Well, what we did, for instance, before you get a sewing job or you mm-hmm. are a tailor, you must know how to do measurement.
Mm-hmm.
You must know letters, you must recognize numbers. So before the start of the class, or the various classes or skills, we introduced to them reading and writing first. We took 6 months to help them how to read and write. Basically, most of them now can spell their names. They can spell people's names, they can as well. They can write down numbers. Because if you are a tailor, you must be able to measure somebody. You know,
be a tailor without taking measurements.
That's it. Yeah. So they have completed that already.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that for 6 months. That process has been completed. And then they got to the various skills that have been completed. The next thing is that we are about to send them for job training mm-hmm. in different locations. After that, they're going to be coming back in for practical, where they will learn those skills that they have learned. We're going to do another practical for another 6 months. After practical, and then graduation. And then we'll go out again onto the street and get other girls that are there and then get them involved into the school as well.
So you kind of mentioned it, but where do these girls come from and why is there a need?
Well, because of the war, most of these girls lost their parents during the war. And the only source of income is for them to do prostitution. On the street, they go on the street in the night, and basically, they sleep with a man for another $1. If you change that amount to a Liberian dollar, mm-hmm. it's about one US dollar for mm-hmm. a night. So now, what we have done is that to be able to go on the street there and tell them that there's lack more important about themselves more than doing what they can do, what they are doing now. I think we can get them to learn a skill. And so we were able to rescue 600 of them. And what we did, we were able to get some medication, or let's say 95% of those girls were high STD cases.
Mm-hmm.
We treated those cases. After then they started going to the various schools as well.
So things like gonorrhea and syphilis, they were all treated for that?
Yes.
Wow.
Go for that. Yeah.
So we talked about the kindergarten through 9. You have the girls, or the school for,
the,
or the training for professional training, I guess we'll call it.
Yeah.
You have medical clinics as well?
Yeah, we have a medical clinic.
What happens in there?
Well, what we do in there is, in the clinic, is that we are providing free medication for all of the students in the morning, the 1,900 kids. Basically, when you come to school, if you are ill, we know your parents cannot afford, so we are taking care of that as well. Then we have the girls, we take care of that. The entire community at large, there is no medical facility, I can tell mm-hmm. you. Yeah. So we are the only organization there that is providing those medical facility there. So we make it free of charge for all of the students, the girls, and the community at large. And we also appeal for teams to come over and then they serve for 1 week and then they return back. So this is how we operate the clinic, and we also operate the clinic on donations. Presently, our clinic, our pharmacy is empty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need donations of medical supplies to continue helping the villages, helping the girls, and helping the kids, because especially like this is the time most of those kids get sick and what have you. So we make sure that we be able to support the entire community with medications.
Wow. You're listening to a special interview with Saad Joseph, a humanitarian aid worker from Liberia who visited Prince George last week. You're listening to CFIR 88.7 here in Prince George, and you're on Health on the Hill. And you have two schools that you're currently running? Or
yeah, two schools in Liberia.
Two schools.
Yeah.
What made you want to do this?
Well, the reason is that I have been a victim as well like those kids. Both of my parents were killed in Liberia. And I stayed in a refugee camp for 10 years. And I also were imprisoned by the Guinean government because there was nobody to identify me. I was imprisoned for 1 year, and I never believed that I was going to leave that prison.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody was able to stand on my behalf. And then I came out, and I started going out, and I met some missionaries, and then they wanted to help me to bring me to the U.S., and I said no, I wanted to stay back and to stand and get involved helping my brothers and sisters. So presently, this is what I've been doing for the past 8 years. In Sierra Leone, I was able to establish 20 schools and 20 churches. Those schools are running very well. And I just came back in my country. I have started with two schools with a women program. And there's a need to help because basically our country, because of the decade of the Civil War, there's no future.
Mm-hmm.
And the only future that we can have to empower the youth, how can we empower the youth, those kids, is by providing education for them. Because if they cannot get any basic education, our country, I can tell you for free, will go back to Civil War. Because those kids can be easily convinced to hold guns and what have you. So this is where I've taken a step to come out to say, look, I'm, by the grace of God, I'm going to talk to people around the world to provide free education, to provide medication, to provide feeding for a program so that, you know, those kids left can come back to normal. So I know what happened to me during the past, and I look at a situation like mine, and I feel that I'm a victim like themselves, and one of those victims need to take the lead, and this is why I'm taking the lead.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So what can people here in Prince George do, whether it's like donating money or donating time by going there? What are you hoping to get?
Well, the first thing I'm hoping to get is that I'm looking at people to be able to come out, to come and get involved. If you are a nurse, if you have the opportunity for you to come and help go in the villages, you know, to school and help. If you are a teacher, maybe you can help to train our teachers, basically. And as well, we would appreciate medical assistance. If you have pharmacists that want to donate medical equipment or donate medication, we say thanks to God, the Rotary in Prince George,
mm-hmm,
have agreed to pay for a 40-foot container to send. Basically, the container is empty. We want that container
filled
with medical assistance, medications, different stuff. We have a lot of people have donated, in fact, sewing machines,
mm-hmm,
which I appreciate. You know, I was surprised when I came. I met about 80 sewing machines by one of our sister who have been to Africa, Judy Bala.
Mm-hmm.
She have been able to talk to people, and people have donated sewing machines, and I saw them. And those sewing machines will be going into the container as well. We want more. We want different stuff. And we want to still have this school run. We want to have the feeding program run. So we will appreciate people donating so that we can be able to have food for those kids. And also donating so that we can have money to pay those teachers to have the school run. So we will also appreciate that.
So that's sewing machines, medication,
yeah,
medical supplies,
exactly,
medical equipment,
exactly.
What about things for school?
Yeah, we need copy books, textbooks, copy books, pencil, pens and pencils. We need book bags for the kids. You know, if people have clothing, we will appreciate getting this clothing as well.
Anything you can use in a school? In a clinic?
Yeah.
Or even a small hospital?
Yeah.
Anything you can use? for teaching the trades.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Hammers and tools,
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah, we appreciate all of this.
And there right now there's a 40-foot container,
yeah,
that is going down,
yeah,
that is empty,
uh-huh,
that needs to be full.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And there's, you're also hoping to get some money to help support this, because,
yeah,
it's expensive.
The food. Yeah, we feed those kids and then to pay the teachers. We need money to be able to buy the rice. Rice is the stable food for those kids. And I can tell you, my brother, most of those kids only depend on the one meal at a school for a day.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult to keep those kids without food, you know. So it's like an emergency situation now that we are begging people, you know, to see how best they can help us so we can get food for those kids.
And this is because you recently lost funding because from a U.S. organization that can't give you the money anymore. So now you're kind of scrambling for money.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We have this adoption agency, mm-hmm, who were adopting kids from Liberia, and they were helping to support the school. Now they have withdrawn from the program since October.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have no food. We don't even have the money to pay the teachers for October. We don't. Since October, we have not even cooked. And medicines are almost about to finish from the clinic. So everything we are now, we're running on the zero. And the hope of those kids depend now on my trip here.
Mm-hmm.
They're waiting for an answer from me. whether good news or bad news. But I trust that I'm going to carry good news back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that. And this is why I want people, whoever here, get the opportunity to hear my voice and you and I today, that we want you to save, join, and let's save those kids' lives who have suffered so long.
So one thing we will do is we'll announce this on the radio. We'll have contact information where people can send money and donations and find out what you want donated here in Prince George, if you would like that. And I hope that everything turns out.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly pray that it does, because sounds like you do amazing work.
Yeah.
And I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
You're
welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that was Saad Joseph. He was kind enough to do an interview with us last week. Now, in the interview, we did mention that there would be information for donation. We don't have that information yet. They're currently in the process of trying to set up a nonprofit organization so everyone can get tax receipts. If you would like information sent to you about that, please email us at hoth@unbc.ca.
Speaking of hoth@unbc.ca, we would just like to point out that at any time, we would value and love your feedback on the show. We got hundreds of emails last week about our vaccination show. Oh, wait, no, sorry. I'm off by about 100. We'd just like to point out that this show is a collaborative effort, and we really need to know how we're doing. So we would really appreciate feedback from anybody about your thoughts on the show, topics for the show, just really anything.
What are you interested? What do you want to hear about?
Yeah, what do you want us to talk about? So again, HOTH or
at
UMBC.ca.
Simon learns internet well.
And that wraps up this show. So again, this is part one of a three-part global health series, and thank you for listening.